Welcome to The One Inside, the Internal Family Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Tammy Sollenberger. On today's podcast, I chat with Brian Jawden about IFS and coaching. Hey, everyone. On today's podcast, I chat with Brian Jawden. He's an IFS trained coach who works with a wide range of clients, from executives and entrepreneurs to shamans and creatives. Brian has led two highly successful IFS and coaching courses and has been around the IFS world for a really long time. We chatted a few times offline when I started the podcast a few years ago, so I love that he will be the last guest for season three. We have such a sweet conversation. I think these are the best kinds for the podcast. It has a lot of interesting information about IFS, about gift development, asking good questions, contracting, and of course, working with our parts. But the best part of the episode, I think, is the authentic connection and the conversation that just flows naturally from that. I'm just so grateful to him, and I'm grateful to all the guests and all the listeners who have made this three seasons of doing the One Inside podcast so fun and so rewarding. You can check out Brian at his website, brianjawden.com. You can also learn more about his gift development at livinggiftconsciousness.org. Definitely keep in touch with Brian to find out more about his own coaching institute that he's developing, which sounds super amazing. You can follow me at IFS Tammy on Instagram and on Twitter, or the One Inside Facebook page. You can get a free copy of Get to Know a Should Part meditation and sign up for my sometimes monthly newsletter at TammySollenberger.com. You can buy my book, The One Inside, 30 Days to Your Authentic Self, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, or wherever you get books. Brian says the right question at the right moment is a key that unlocks a lock. Then we give space to experience the ripple that comes from that. Brian and I chatted afterwards about all the things, and he did this for me. He asked the right question in the right moment and let silence sit. The question and the curiosity I have about it has continued to ripple. I will see you all in the fall for season four. Enjoy. Hi.
Hi, Tammy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great.
What I think I want to talk to you about first is I heard from so many people that took your IFS and coaching course. I think it was in the fall. And I think it was wildly successful. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I know you took a lot of time to put that together. And right. I think you had, it was really, really, really successful. So can we start there and just sort of see where we go from there?
Sure. And if I could just back up a tiny bit, back in 2018, I was part of the IFS Institute's first ever really official offering of any kind around IFS and coaching. And I co-designed and co-taught that with my colleague, Anna Tanzi, who is in Connecticut. And so we didn't really know what the audience would be then. I kind of remember talking to John Schwartz, the executive director at the time. I said, John, how are we going to measure whether this was successful or not? Because I was thinking if we got 50 people, that would be a huge success. And we ended up getting over 500 globally.
And in 2018,
it really knocked us all off. And we really were struck by the appetite and the interest in the application of IFS in the coaching industry. So that was in 2018. And then, 2021 rolls around and, there've been some rumblings about, we should do another version. And so I ended up partnering with another colleague, Guthrie Sayin, a very masterful teacher, a master of the model. And we have very different styles and we work in very different ways. And I think that was a real plus. So we ended up offering, I think it was called Coaching for Self-Leadership, as you said, this past fall. We ended up getting over 1,000 people globally live, to participate give or take in the live sessions. And of course, I think it's gone into evergreen status now, but that particular course was for people, for coaches who were ostensibly new to the model. And of course, people snuck in who were not new to the model because there's such an appetite for IFS these days. But that was really designed for people who were really first encountering IFS and to kind of really help them see where they could take IFS in their own coaching practice. So that was really a lot of fun to design and co-deliver with Guthrie. Yeah, so we got a really great response and it was fun delivering it. And, you know, there's been a lot of energy and buzz around IFS and coaching.
What do you think? So in 2018 then, and maybe even in 2021 and mm-hmm. now, what do you feel like was missing or what was happening that coaches weren't getting what they needed from whatever the IFS Institute was providing?
Yeah, I think that, well, first of all, not everyone who is in the coaching world is drawn to the therapeutic application. So, you know, I'm a former MSW dropout of 25 years ago. So I was actually enrolled I thought I was going to become a therapist actually about 25 years ago. And about halfway through the MSW program, I was enrolled in through UNC Chapel Hill, which was one of the best programs in the country. I just realized that is not my path and left school. And I gravitated pretty quickly to coaching. But I think not everybody is really drawn to that really in-depth kind of therapeutic application. So it's really doesn't fit. I mean, there are coaches who do go through that traditional track, but I think that more and more we're seeing that there really is a need for a different track. And I know that's very much on the Institute's radar. I chatted with Katie Nelson, the CEO, the other day, and you know, I know that's part of their strategic plan is to really figure out what that looks like and what that particular offering will be. But they are keenly aware that there's a real hunger and an audience waiting for a coaching, some form of a track to learn IFS, both what the model is and how to apply it in coaching. So it's just a matter of time when that will come. So these courses that happened in 2018 and 2021, through the auspices of the Institute have been a way to sort of help, I don't know, just sort of lay down some track and test out some content and see what people are interested in. What do people respond to? What are the questions that come up? What are people really interested in? What are they curious about? So that's been part of the process.
I love that just like with so many other things that we keep hearing about, whether it's IFS in schools or mm-hmm. IFS in business, that it's like IFS is just getting and mm-hmm. it's getting out of the therapy room, which is yes. partly why I wanted to start the podcast. It's partly why I wrote a book. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's get this out of therapy. I mean, it's great for therapy. I'm a therapist. So obviously I love that, but mm-hmm. it needs to be out in just the general public.
Absolutely. And I know, you know, I mean, I've had long conversations with Dick Schwartz about this for over a decade. And I know he's very passionate about all these applications, including coaching and including in business. And, you know, as you and I both know, IFS is exploding around the planet and coaching is exploding. So here you have these sort of two runaway trains.
Yeah.
And I think there's just sort of we're riding a wave right now where there's, a lot of opportunity to bring IFS to coaching. And I often talk about that IFS has a real gift to bring to the coaching industry and the coaching industries, I mean, the coaching community. So I'm a huge believer that coaching industry needs IFS and models like it to coach the whole person, because a lot of what I see in the coaching industry, there's a lot of bypassing that's going on. There's a lot of I don't know if we're ready to get into this, but I mean, there's just a lot of coaching that I see happening that is one, not effective, and two, actually doing potential harm to the client. So I think a model like IFS can, which is so honoring of the client system and is so comprehensive and holistic, that, you know, in my experience, we do the client a disservice by only engaging with the parts of the client that want change.
Right. So in coaching, there's a part of me that wants to back way up. I'm just going to make myself a note. I want to back way up and I want to talk more about you, but before we'll stay with this and then we'll go back up, to you. My nosy parts want to know all the things. So, what happens then? So what happens differently in coaching than in therapy is someone comes to you. So what would that look like? That's different. Like if someone comes to you as a coaching client versus if they come to me as a therapy client.
Well, I don't know is the real answer. I mean, you know, therapy and coaching, that's the hot question in not just the IFS community, but in other communities is what's the difference? Where does therapy end and coaching begin? That's one of the questions. And then with IFS specifically, where can an IFS informed or an IFS trained coach go that's within integrity and also in service to the client? And there's multiple answers to that question. But but the reality is there's a lot of overlap, I think, depending on a given therapist and a given coach. There may be no overlap and there may be a lot of overlap. So I think it really depends on each practitioner's training, their natural gifts are. I think not only do we have all this wonderful training available to us, but we also have these innate abilities that we all came into the world with. Mm. And those factor in as well. So what are we naturally gifted at? Also, where are we in the arc of a relationship with a client? That factors in. What is our contract with the client? And so, and I look at that contracting piece as having three levels. So there's the kind of initial contract of what is our purpose together, or as Carolyn Mace would say, what's our sacred contract? You know, what is our work together? Whether you're a therapist or a coach, what is the work that we are about to embark on? What is the scope? Are we going to work in the internal world as well as the external world, or just the external? What does that look like? Yeah. And so there's that initial contract, and then there's session to session contracting, and then there's in the moment contracting. So if we are truly attuned to the client, we are at various points of a session saying, okay, now we found ourselves at this intersection. Now, where are we going to go?
I love that.
So what it looks like really depends on all those variables.
Right. And I'm also thinking it depends. That makes so much sense to me. And I'm also thinking it depends on the variable of, you know, what type of coaching you're doing, right? If you're doing, if you're in a business setting and you're having a business meeting and it's a business coaching or academic coaching or some sort of, I don't know. I just feel like that's going to look different. I remember one of my clients ended up going to a coach around like time management and procrastination at work. And I feel like that was just a better fit for him. And, you know, he struggled with, you know, if I have a conversation with someone, I'm going to go, I'm the person at the grocery store, like we're going to like, how you feeling about that thing. And so I think for him, that is actually what he needed was more of this, like a business coach that was, and I'm using my hand right now because I'm thinking it was really surface. It was really a surface level, which feels really judgmental, but I feel like that's kind of what he needed.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's, you know, one of the models that I work with in my coaching other than IFS is this idea of full engagement. And there was a book that came out many years ago that looked at what does it require for someone to be fully engaged in any given role, whether it's at work in your personal life. So their whole theory was it's not time we need to be focused on, it's energy. And how do we manage our energy? And then we could go even deeper to say, well, where is our energy going and why is it going in those directions and where does it need to be going? So there's many layers of that conversation that can happen. And that would depend on the individual coach's orientation, their way of seeing the world, their training, and again, their natural gifts. So all those things coming. If somebody comes for me for time management, I would just politely say, I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm interested in a different level of conversation. I'm not suited to be of service to someone. And I'm not saying that's a bad focus, but that's not what I bring to the table as a coach. I mean, I'm interested in a much deeper conversation, which is where does your energy go and where does it want to go? And what is the, how do we get from point A to point B? So.
I love that. And so is it that my energy go, if I IFS that a little bit, like, does my energy go somewhere as sort of a protector, sort of like a, you know, some of my energy wants to go here and, but my energy is going here. And is that what I kind of look at my protective system to find out kind of why that's happening?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was just had a session with a client today. It was only our second session. And this is through a business relationship. And so their employer is asking me to work with this person because there's some issues there. Right. So that often happens. But what got revealed in our second session together was that there's a place where this client's energy needs to go, but the pattern is it's not going there. So I wanted to find out, well, why is it not going there? And we pretty quickly got into a conversation that there was a part of her, and I just started to sort of gently weave in a little bit of IFS language that feels overwhelmed. And when it feels overwhelmed, it just shuts everything down. So we kind of identified it pretty quickly. There's this pattern of overwhelm and shutdown, pattern of overwhelm and shutdown. So I sort of asked a classic IFS question. It was sort of, when do you first, I didn't even sort of want to interview a part. I said, where do you think that originated? How far back into your life does it go back into your, you know, 20s, your teens? And so she was able to pretty quickly access to her father, who dealt with certain his own energy patterns in a way that could have a backlash on her and other members of the family. Mm. So it's sort of we're really talking about a trauma response, to put it through, you know, IFS language. So that trauma response is preventing her from her energy going to where it needs to go.
Right. Right.
And so then it becomes an inquiry, as you know, of, well, let's learn more about why it does what it does, that part, and then why it does what it does.
So this is what I've heard, and I'm curious how you handle this. So as a therapist, mm-hmm. I want to go to that, right? I want to go to that exile,
yes,
and have her love up on that exile.
That's a protector. That was a protector.
That part was a protector.
Which there is definitely an exile there, but the protector is coming in and shutting everything down when it senses that things are becoming too much.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Okay. So then you can hang out then with the protective system, getting mm-hmm. to know that part that shuts it down. And then also the part that feels like it's too much, because that mm-hmm. might also be another protector, the part that mm-hmm. feels like it's too much maybe.
Right.
Okay. So you can hang out there, but in my mind, I'm hanging out there because I want to go to the little one that mm-hmm. had this experience of dad. So I'm immediately thinking, like, when she starts mm-hmm. talking about dad, right, I'm immediately thinking of the little one inside of her that had this experience of dad, and she needs to go be with that part and witness it and unburden it and love up on it. And so that's kind of where my mind's going. But as a coach, my understanding is you aren't doing that, or are you, or?
Well, it depends on the individual, and it depends on all those factors I just named.
Okay. Okay.
So, I mean, I happened before I encountered IFS, I trained in IFS almost 20 years ago. I think my level one was in 2003, and I did level two after that. So before I encountered IFS, I studied trauma. I was a trauma, you know, student and practitioner, and I trained with one of the true pioneers in the trauma field. And so that was my first entry point into all of this. And so I'm well versed in that world. Now I happen to be a coach, but again, it comes back to the contracting piece. So, and this is still the three levels of contracting for me. It's the initial scope, it's the session to session, and it's the moment to moment. So far, you know, it's to be determined, I would say, for me. So I would say for now, I'm working with the protector part, and then we'll see where it unfolds from here. And I think what I did do is I asked if this person had a therapist, and they do, and I kind of nudge them to kind of re-up with the therapist so that there is this potentially tandem relationship. Now, I'm assuming this person doesn't do IFS, but although they could. So, but this, that deeper work often is done with a therapist. And so there's this tandem kind of dual track relationship or dual track work that can happen. Now I'm actually equipped to do the deeper exile work, but I don't know that our contract will allow for that. And again, that's one of the things that I'll be paying attention to session to session, moment to moment, because the golden question for me is always what's in service to the client. That is the gold standard in every moment of a session is what's in service to the client. So there may be a part of me or a part of you that says, hey, I really want to take them here, but is that in service to the client in that moment? Yeah. And that's to me, the litmus test.
I love that because this woman possibly is not, you know, she's thinking she's coming sort of for work thing.
Exactly.
And so you already
time management.
Right, exactly. And so you already, she's like, I'm coming for time management, which I'm putting in quotes. And you're already, and so I can almost imagine treading really lightly, like, okay, now we're talking about your father, and I want to hold very lightly that you're here for time management, and your system might not be ready for that. So I'm going to back up a little bit and even say, what is it like for you in this moment?
Yeah.
You know, just to be noticing this, you're here for this.
Asked that same question at some point where I just said, you know, so what's it like knowing about this part of you and how much power and influence it has in your system and why it does what it does? And I loved her response. It was beautiful. I loved it. She said, I really appreciate it for one. She said, and I just thought, oh, this is beautiful, right? We're in the zone, right? So she said, I appreciate it. And I kind of wish it would let me go.
No.
And I just thought, you know, that's such a sacred moment.
Yeah.
For her to have that level of self-awareness and acknowledgement and recognition. And I said, can we just hold space for both of those to exist in right this moment? Can we hold space for you to thank this part and to say, thank you so much for keeping me safe. Mm. And there's another part of me that wants you to let me go.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And just hold that. Mm. And that's way plenty for me in that moment, right? Or in that session, right? So that just that piece is potentially a game changer for her.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, that could be life-changing. Yeah. That could be life-changing.
I mean, I kind of called it like, you know, this part of her, I said, it's almost like you have a thermostat. You have this thermostat part that when things get too hot or too heated or too much, it shuts everything down. And one of the questions I asked her, I said, let's just ask, is the thermostat set at the right setting right now? So let's just check in. And she did. And she said, yeah, it's at the right setting right now. She said, I can see down the road where it might, you know, like my capacity will be greater and I can set the setting can be different, but for right now, it's at the right setting. So to me, that's again, part of the gift of IFS, because it's not like, nope, there's only one setting. And you need to get there and you need to get there in X amount of time. And if you don't get there, there's something wrong with that. You know, that's a coaching conversation that happens every day, which is to me, almost violent. You know, I may often call IFS a nonviolent model. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is, you know, that's the nuance and the honoring aspect of IFS, which is such a beautiful contribution to the coaching community.
I love that so much because so in my experience, I have a couple of friends that are coaches, like, and I feel like they ask the best questions. I don't know why that is. I mean, I can ask a good question, but like, there's something about coaching questions that just feel different than therapy questions. And I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just depends on the practitioner. I think that it doesn't matter which track we're on. I think there are people that's one of their gifts is, and they ask the right question in the right moment. And the right question in the right moment is like a key that unlocks a lock. And that is such a beautiful tool.
Yeah.
And some are better than others, whether you're a therapist or a coach. But I think being able to listen for the right question. I don't know. There's a practice that I've gotten exposed to. I don't know if you've heard of it in the Quaker community. There's something called a clearness committee. And a clearness committee is anybody in a Quaker community who is facing a life challenge or a transition they pull together a circle from their community, and all they can do is ask questions. That's all they can. They can't make any statements or give any advice. And
I
so
love that. Wow.
And the questions, I've experienced this multiple times, and I think that's, I found it quite inspirational. But, and the standard in the Quaker community is unless this question came to you from God, don't ask it. So it's sort of like, if you're just asking it to ask it, or if it's some like, you know, I mean, like, wait for the Spirit of God to move through you to see what question to ask. And I know that's a pretty high standard. I'm not saying that should be our standard, but I think I remember that experience. And again, it's what's in service to that individual in that moment. And the other thing about that I witnessed clearness committee is there needs to be space for the question to ripple. When a really great question is asked, it ripples throughout the person's system, and it has several waves. And we need to create enough space for that person to experience all the ripples and not stack too many questions. And I'm guilty of this sometimes. Sometimes I forget to do this, but not stack too many questions on top of each other, because then the nervous system gets a little bit overwhelmed. But yeah, I mean, that's I think that is the most powerful tool of the coach is the question.
That's beautiful. And I love that, because if I'm holding that it's in service to the person I'm working with, then I would ask a question and then give space and be quiet and let those ripples happen, because something's happening on the inside of them.
Yeah. And then we it's not proprietary to IFS, but we often ask the question, what are you noticing? Right. So that's a great question to at some point to say, just what are you noticing?
Yeah. I feel like I've picked up, you know, what's happening right now. And I don't know where I've picked that up, but I feel like that's what I'm asking that all the time. Just what's happening in this moment. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing. And I think it's a U-turn though, right? It's like, what's happening in this moment, and it gets them more connected to their system and their bodies. And I think it gets them out of their head a little bit.
Yeah. And to, you know, you can begin to, the client begins to download information, and then we as the practitioner can begin to kind of catalog information and then ask it again. What else, is there anything else there, and sort of a little bit of sort of, well, what else is there, if anything? And then you can kind of begin to illuminate that internal landscape. And I think that's part of what's happening in IFS is we're illuminating for the client their internal landscape.
What's happening for me as you say that, I'll just go ahead and practice this. What's happening for me as you say that is how often we're either rushing or we're in relationship where I feel like I have to hurry up and say what I'm going to say, And then because you're going to hurry up and say what you're going to say, and there isn't the space and the quiet to, for my internal landscape to be illuminated.
Right.
And then in relationship, if there isn't space for me to do that and a space for you to do that, then, you know, then that's going to, we're sort of rushing each other so much.
Right.
It, even if it's in our personal relationships or even in a therapeutic or coaching relationship, you know, I'm like, I got 55 minutes or something and let's hurry it up.
I mean, it doesn't, you know, for most of us, it's a rare opportunity to really slow things down. You know, often talk about, you know, it's about slowing the movie down and actually watching the movie of our life frame by frame. And if we can do that, we get information that we wouldn't get otherwise. It just moves too fast. So if we can slow the movie down and watch it frame by frame and notice what's happening, then, you know, it just, that internal world just unfolds and reveals itself in, with enough safety and with enough honoring. Most people are ready to do that. You know, that's again part of the sacred contract between the client and the practitioner, is that that's unfolding and that gradual revealing can begin to happen.
I want to shift to the gifts, the gift development work, because you hinted to that about sort of, you know, the coaches, you know, their personality and all that stuff, and also their giftedness.
Yes.
So I'm curious about that. And we're definitely going to talk about that, but I'm curious.
And then there's also the gift of the client and their system and seeing every part of them as having a gift for the system as well. So yeah, it goes both ways.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's not just, okay. So I want to talk about that. And then I also am curious about how you ended up, sort of more of your story, like how you ended up like this MSW program, not for me. And then what happened after, you know, from there until 20 years ago doing IFS, and sort of curious about your story too. So we can cover both of those.
I'll follow your lead.
Well, why don't we start with, let's talk about you a little bit. Tell me what happened, as much as you want to share and you feel comfortable sharing, how you ended up leaving this program and then how you ended up finding IFS and what you've been doing for 20 years.
Well, I'll try to,
you don't have to share all of that, but
I'll try to give you the cliff notes a little bit. But, so I think I mentioned my first career as a journalist. I can't remember if I mentioned that. So I spent my 20s in Washington, D.C. as a journalist, which was a great ride, a wonderful adventure. I ended up having my dream job at age 28. I was a news editor of a national magazine. But by 30, I was done. I was so burned out, partly because of the content that I was covering. This was particular magazine. Was dedicated to social justice around the planet. So all of the content I was working with was around that. So I actually developed a chronic illness in 1992, which was my final year as a journalist. And I had to just unplug. I ended up moving out of DC. I moved to the North Carolina mountains to heal, like a lot of people go to the mountains to heal or wherever they go to heal. And I had no inkling of what my next career would be. So it was only in the process of my own healing journey that I began to notice that how I was reporting out my healing process was having an impact on other people. So I went through probably a 3-year healing journey to heal from this illness. And it was kind of my version at the time of The Dark Night of the Soul, which many of your listeners will relate to. And I think in that healing, kind of being on my own healing path, was sort of the seeds of what my work would become, which is all the big questions. Why are we here? And sort of what is healing? What does healing require? And so that just became sort of in my experience. And I think at a certain point, I realized that I wanted to dedicate my life to being in service in a different way, not as a journalist, but in some form a practitioner. I thought it was a therapist at the time. But then when that didn't feel right, I think I just, I think somebody gave me the opportunity to do a coaching gig. A friend of mine said, hey, I have somebody who is a supervisor and I don't know what to do with them. I think you might be helpful. Can you talk to them? So it was kind of one of these sort of random, not random, you know, doors that opened, and I had a chance to talk with a supervisor, and I thought, that was fun. You know, I really enjoyed that. And I felt like, so we kept that relationship going, and it just sort of, that was the door that opened to this whole world of coaching. And I didn't even really know that's what I was doing, but I just gravitated to it. So that everything sort of unfolded from there.
I love that. And I feel like so many people's stories are these personal stories, right? Here's something that I went through. Here's something that I struggled with, and I want to help people. I feel like I hear that all the time from other, you know, practitioners and therapists and people that are in the healing world.
Yeah. I mean, my bias is that we're all here to be of service in some form. And that could be so many different ways, you know, and I think, you know, and that could be related to our job or not. But for me, that's been very closely tied to my career.
Yeah. And in so many ways, we're fortunate for that, right? That something that you're passionate about, you get to do as your job.
Yeah. It sort of makes something simpler and or more clear.
Yeah.
About what the path is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so tell me about the gift development work. I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, well, this is interesting because, you know, I think, I don't know if this everyone experiences this, but oftentimes things are trying to get our attention and we don't understand what it is. And we, in my case, pushed it away because I kept getting this sort of almost like a download of information around this gifts work. And I just didn't know what it was and I didn't know how it fit in my life and career. And but I was getting little, like, almost like glimpses and snapshots of what it might be. And so what it was ultimately became this framework that that I developed called the 5 stages of gift development. And I'll just briefly name what those are. But so the first stage is invocation or invitation. So it's that state of being of I'm ready to know. I'm ready to know what my gifts are. And then the second stage is clarifying or the essence of the gift. So all gifts, I believe, have a kind of a core essence of, and it's not from our ego. It's just embedded in the gift itself. So, and I believe all gifts, like parts, have their own consciousness. Mm-hmm. So part of it is listening to the consciousness of the gift to say, what are you about? You know, what is your purpose? And so that's the second stage. The third is receiving or claiming the gift, because just because we have a gift doesn't mean we've claimed it or received it. Mm-hmm. And it could be with us, but we haven't really fully received it and embodied it. And I always say we can only offer our gifts in the world to the extent that we've received them.
That's so beautiful.
If we only received a gift at 30%, that's the percentage that we can put it out in the world. Mm. And then the fourth stage is honoring the gift. So that means, am I ready to make room in my life for this gift in some form? And that means in my awareness, in my daily life, it might in some case be I create a dedicated space, but somehow, and I'm also beginning to look for opportunities in life to offer my gift. So that's there sort of many aspects of honoring the gift. And then the fifth is offering the gift in the world. And of course, as in many of these developmental models, we're in multiple stages at a time. So finally, in about 2009, I don't know if you probably remember that things were not great economically. That was kind of around the time of the big economic crash. And I, you know, my life was not working very well. My career was not going very much anywhere. And I've kind of in a weak moment, I said yes to this gift. I said, because I almost got a message from the gift that said, if you don't pay attention to me, your life's not going to work very well. So if you want your life to work, you should pay attention. So it wasn't out of some altruistic motivation that I said yes. It was that I wanted my life to work.
Yeah.
So that's, so since that time, I began to formalize the work, and I kind of put on my journalist hat, and I started interviewing anybody who would talk to me about their gifts. I would interview them. And what I noticed in those interviews is that those all became coaching sessions, and I began helping people identify what their gifts were. And then also the work can be, this is where IFS can really play a big role is, you know, one of the questions I often ask my clients is, you know, what is the gift that you're here to bring? And are you offering it? And if you're not offering it, why aren't you doing that? So, I mean, I think we all have multiple gifts, but I think in some ways we can almost distill or filter that question as to what is the gift that you're here to bring? And I often ask that of executives and CEOs and business owners and entrepreneurs and other people. And that's a very powerful conversation. And to me, I have just naturally incorporated this gifts language and this gift inquiry process and this five stages into my coaching model. So that to me is, it's such a universally core conversation. Because what I've found is if we're not actively offering our gifts, or at least somewhere in the stages moving through them, then our life doesn't work very well. You know, it creates this energetic kink, and we are out of balance. We are, our relationship to giving and receiving in the universe is not in balance, which can create all kinds of problems. And so I think it's just one very powerful lens that I look through, and it's a language that I use to help clients sort of become in right relationship with their gifts, but also by extension in right relationship to the world around them.
Beautiful. What, I love that. And I feel like it fits with IFS so, so well. And I loved, it's almost like you're kind of unblending from the gift and then having a conversation and having a relationship with your gift or, you know, your many part, gifts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about for, and okay, this is the other thing that came up for me is that, back to sort of where you're the energy, right? Like how many people, especially in their 20s, I'm seeing this, is my clients that are in their 20s are just so struggling with what are my gifts and what are my purposes? And, you know, their energy goes one way, but that feels like not where they want to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, and then you kind of said that at the beginning about sort of where your energy is going. And I'm wondering if that, you know, how that lines up with this idea of my gifts, like my energy is going somewhere, but that's maybe not aligned to what my gift, my, where my gifts want to go.
Right. Right. Well, first of all, my first reaction is if they're struggling with that question, boy, are they on a fast track. They're already struggling with that question. So I think that's great. I mean, so
I think they're so much more into mental health. Yes. The generation is like, yes, that's my experience.
But I think that's part of it, you know, is what are my gifts and how do they fit in my life? And what does that look like? And what gets in the way? What are the parts of any particular individual that have either shut down gifts or, you know, or minimize them or disregard them? So a lot of what happens is, you know, I remember in one leadership training I was doing with my business partner at the time, Ed, he and I co-developed this course called the Power Self Leadership course inspired by IFS. This was about 12 years ago. And I really didn't want gifts to be a part of the curriculum. I thought I was still in the stages I had not received or claimed the gift yet. So I was like, we are not putting the gifts into this power of self-leadership. And he said, yeah, we are. We're putting it in. It belongs in there. And so to his credit, he really nudged me to kind of move through my own barriers about having that even in the curriculum. But it ended up being one of the most powerful parts of the training. And I remember one woman, when we were moving through the gifts portion of this training, I kind of had a literal and verbal oh shit moment. She actually kind of exclaimed, oh shit, you know, I can see how I have designed my entire career so that my gift never saw the light of day. So in that moment, she got a glimpse of how her parts, she didn't have that language, but how her system and her parts had organized things so that it never came to the surface.
Interesting.
And I think that's not unusual. So, Right. Or people are in some version of that equation where we have either, pushed down or overridden or bypassed or diminished the gifts that we do have, because our gifts have power. And often there is some trauma history related to gifts. So we have to sort through that as well. So there's a whole healing and developmental process that can happen to really fully move into this right relationship with gifts. And I think, as you said, IFS is just a beautiful counterpart and a partner in that conversation, so that people can move through in an honoring way what is preventing them from knowing and discovering and beginning to fully embody and offer their gifts in the world.
That's beautiful. Yeah. What happened for me, as you said, that is, yeah, if you ask a client or even ask yourself, or sort of if listeners are sort of thinking about their own gifts and struggling with sort of, you know, why they're not using them, just asking that IFS question, like asking the part, what are you afraid would happen if you did? Right. And I think that will lead to some of that trauma of like, you know, then I'll be exposed, or, yes, you know, I have to play small, or it's, or, you know, it's not ridiculed or criticized or vulnerable or shamed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it just keeps us safe. Maybe sort of not using those gifts, you know, our parts will do anything to keep us safe. And so that not using our gifts often maybe, you know, feels like it keeps us safe.
Completely. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a big part of the conversation and the process, is to move through those conversations and to do it in a way that is, again, you know, honoring and nonviolent.
Yeah, honoring that, of course, that part's doing that for a really good reason. And, you know, we're not bypassing that part to be like, well, get out of the way, we have to use our gifts. Like, that part has good reason for doing that.
I remember I kind of hid this gifts work from the IFS community for like several years. Like, cause I was just kind of like, cause you know, the IFS community, as it is for you, is a very sacred community. It's and so I was even, what, you know, there's this whole phenomenon of gifts hoarding, right? We hoard our gifts. And so I was hoarding this gifts work from the IFS community. And finally I said, okay, I'll do a workshop on gifts and IFS. And I ended up doing it, I don't remember what year it was, but I was just blown away by how beautifully these different models fit. And I remember doing, and the third methodology I've been weaving in is constellation work out of Germany. So, which you may be familiar with, but it's beautiful, very powerful model. Again, similar to IFS, originated in the therapeutic community and now has applications such as coaching around the globe. But part of what I set up was for this particular demo was to help the individual have represented externally the gift and then any protector parts, as we would say. And then, but I had the recipients, the future recipients of the gift represented as well. So, and what happens is that quote unquote client gets to witness and experience the gift and the receivers of the gift meeting for the first time. And that is, talk about a game changer. And it doesn't mean there's not parts work to do, but it's kind of like they see, again, the sacred contract. There's a sacred contract between our gifts and those that are the recipients that are waiting for our gifts opens up the system in a way that maybe we haven't seen before.
That's beautiful. And for the parts to see that, because if the parts are stuck in the past, right, not to override them or bypass them, but if they're stuck in the past, to see, wow, if I use my gifts, not only is it safe, it's actually for healing the world. Like what an opposite experience these parts have had. Like,
and by the way, if I'm not doing that, I'm not fulfilling my divine contract for being on the planet in the first place.
And I think that's what then ends up happening, where we just sort of keep hitting brick walls, where you're like, why is my life not working? Why is my life not working? Why is, you know, and then there's that experience. And then there's this sort of opposite experience of just when things are in flow and you're just like, I don't understand why all these things are just working out the way that feels so good.
Yeah. And again, it's not to override or diminish the why the parts have shown up the way they have, because they're obviously they've done that for good reason. But as you said, once they kind of see the big picture, then there often is a softening. And, you know, kind of they have new information. They have a bit, they have that divine purpose information that maybe they didn't have before. So that opens up a world of possibility.
That's beautiful. So I know we're running out of time. Is there anything else you want to say before we do the plugs of all the amazing things you're doing? Is there anything else you want the listeners to know, or anything else?
I mean, there's so many different directions we could go. I mean, there's more to be said maybe another time about the gift of IFS to the coaching community, because there, I do believe the coaching industry, like all industries, there is a shadow side to the coaching industry. And I think that you know, IFS isn't the be all end all solution to that, but I think it does play an important role in helping address the shadow of the coaching industry. So I'll just leave it at that. A little bit of a teaser maybe.
Okay. So next season, you'll have to come back.
Yeah, but so I think that we'll leave that there for now.
All right. That sounds great. And so you have some really cool things coming up. So tell everybody what you have coming up over the next 6 months or year or so.
Thank you for that. So one of the things I'm doing now is I'm working with peer groups. I'm a huge believer in peer development. And so I am offering in September and October, I'll offer another peer group for 8 coaches who need some foundation in IFS, whether it's level 1 or a level 1 alternative or an IFS circle, or maybe they did one of the courses that I co-delivered. But to really be in a peer setting with 8 people that can really witness each other in the coaching saddle and be able to offer each other loving feedback, but also to try on new ways of incorporating IFS. So it's really become a very powerful container for people to really deepen their IFS informed coaching skills in a safe setting. So that's happening. So that'll probably be another one this fall if people are interested in that. The other thing I'm really busy at work on is I'm going to be launching my own coaching institute in early 2023, which is really sort of my legacy project. I just turned 60 in March. So this is sort of I've realized that I need to really put 25 years of coaching to formalize it into a methodology that I can really train and mentor other coaches in, which is really an emerging passion of mine. I love training and coaching and mentoring other coaches. So that's a stay tuned. I don't know when that announcement will come formally, but my hope is that the first cohort will start in March of 2023. So I'm busy at work on that project right now.
That is so exciting. Do you have an idea of what the name of your coaching institute will be?
That's a hot topic right now. So I'm playing around with the idea of the Pisgah Coaching Institute, only because Pisgah is a mountaintop in this sacred land area that I've spent a lot of time in, but I don't know if that name will have enough resonance, you know, globally, and, or does it matter? So I'm wrestling with the name a little bit right now, but that's the one I'm playing with right now.
I'm so excited about that. And then, and you also are doing another IFS and coaching, course. Is that right?
Nothing on the books right now. Okay. One of the ideas that, I'm bouncing around with the Institute. I don't know if it's, it's not a definite it'll happen, is the idea of a coaching summit. So that would just be, you know, maybe a 1 day or a 2 day offering where people could come and, you know, join a conversation about IFS and coaching. So to kind of keep people sort of keep that conversation alive.
Yeah.
While we're waiting for a more formalized coaching track. But I think any way we can be engaging in that conversation about, you know, what is IFS informed coaching? What does it look like? Where are the all the many applications of where it can go, I think is a good thing.
That's great. So last question, if you were not doing all that you're doing mm-hmm. and you could do anything instead, but you had to do something different, what would you do?
Great question. Well, at one point I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker. I don't know if I still have that in me, but I love stories, and I love the idea of telling stories that, have not been told in a certain way, or kind of the untold story of things that, are happening in the world that maybe not have found their audience yet. So I don't know if that would be it. I'd love to start a podcast, at some point. I don't know if that'll happen. It's been fun to watch you kind of grow your podcast and to find your audience and to find your voice. And I have a lot of admiration and respect for you to really go down that path. So it's been fun to watch.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Thanks for hanging out today. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe. And if you really like this episode, share it with a friend and leave a review. You can follow me on Instagram at IFSTammy and join our community on Facebook at the One Inside Podcast. Talk to you next time.